Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Well, certainly one thing that we know is that hip-hop, over the last, maybe 30 years or so, has emerged as a very potent force in popular culture around the world. And certainly it has had a great impact on how young people from very diverse backgrounds talk, walk, dress. And this morning, we'll talk a little bit about that, about the impact of hip-hop on popular culture. Perhaps also a little bit talk about its impact on language, because that is the subject of a one-day workshop that's going to be taking place here on Vi Campus, Language and Hip-Hop Culture in a Globalizing World, looking at this relationship between language and hip-hop culture. And there are a number of sponsors. The list is very long. I will not try to read all of them, but I do want to say that we're very pleased here to have with us on the program one of the featured speakers for this conference. His name is Awad Ibrahim. He is Associate Professor of Education at the University of Ottawa in Canada. He also taught for more than 5 years at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and he is very much interested in connections between race, language, globalization, culture, and the politics of identity, also the impact of black popular culture on young people, and has published in these areas in hip-hop studies and black pop culture. He was born and grew up in Sudan, was educated there, and also in Canada. He has his PhD from the University of Toronto. And as I said, we're really pleased to have him here in the studio to talk with us. Questions, of course, are welcome. Whatever input people would like to give us who are listening, that's certainly fine. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here.
It's my absolute pleasure to be here, actually.
I'm not sure how many people that are listening to us might ever or regularly listen to hip-hop. It's a slightly different demographic than ours, but I'm sure that there is some overlap. I'm wondering, well, are there some people that might be not even sure what hip-hop is? How exactly does one define hip-hop?
Well, it's actually, first of all, I have to sincerely thank Urbana Champaign, and particularly the linguistic department, for this opportunity. And I'm filling big shoes, clearly, because I'm coming after William Lebov, and you have interviewed him last year. So clearly, this is like big shoes for me. Well, hip-hop, about 30 years ago, there is a group of young black male, to be very specific, gathered under a tree, and they had a huge audio system, basically. So they were just jamming. They were just playing together and dancing, and from there on emerged a kind of a spoken word that came along with the basically with the music, and hence the creation of hip hop. There's about five elements to hip hop. The most commonly known is this spoken word, that is rapping. Clearly, there's graffiti. There is a dance, b-boying and b-girling. Basically, and above all, there is the whole question of hip hop as or rap as knowledge, which is the most significant element that we tend to forget quite a bit. So, in that sense, then hip hop is, in the almighty KRS-One's words, rap is something we say. But hip hop is who we are.
Yeah.
So it's a way of being, a way of thinking, a way of behaving, talking, and so on. So it's a cultural phenomenon that is not just limited to the music, but also to a whole host of spheres, if you like, you know, anywhere from the music to clothes to and especially for this conference, language. Mm-hmm. And I will be actually talking, and I have talked a little bit about what I want to call global hip hop nation language. And that's a really, really significant development. And I think it's in so many ways. You probably, if you open your TV to BBC anywhere around the world, or if you have a satellite, and if you just visited, actually, for that matter, Mexico, anywhere in South America, anywhere in Europe, the continent, Africa, as well as Asia, there is a really, really interesting stuff going on. And the first thing, I was just in Senegal about 3 months ago, and the first thing I saw was this brother who had 50 Cent's T-shirt on. It was absolutely amazing.
In Senegal.
And that's the first person I met, and I'm just off the plane.
Yeah. For those people who are not initiated, 50 Cent is now a very popular, very successful rap artist.
Correct. Yes. Correct. And to just give people a taste of what hip hop is about, there's kind of two schools of thought, two approaches, if you like, at a theoretical level, at least. There is what we call the party hip hop, and that is linked to a particular genre of music, and that's the part that most people are complaining about. And what I call the booty hip hop. And then there is what I want to term the conscious hip hop. It's not my term, but it's commonly known. This is the political hip hop, the aspect that is commonly associated with people like Mos Def, Talib Kweli, clearly Almighty KRS-One, and I'm going to repeat that name a few times, because he has the most influence on political consciousness. And interestingly enough, actually, he taught a course with Cornel West at Princeton. We're talking about a very high caliber of scholarship, basically, and scholars. It's a term that we don't associate very often with some of the scene and some of the hip hoppers. The thing about hip hop is its diversity, and that's something we need to talk about. And just to give people a taste of what I'm talking about, we probably should play a couple of tracks.
Yeah, let's do that.
I want us to listen first to the first school of thought, that is the booty hip hop, represented here in Mystical. Clearly, that's the first school of thought, mm-hmm. and what I call the booty, and that's the one that probably a lot of young people are attracted to. The second school of thought, which may be of particular interest to your audience, given the demographic nature of the program, is the conscious hip hop. And here, I don't know, I don't want to plug it in and make it an ad for Saul Williams. If you don't have his CD, please check it out. And we're going to listen a track to. We'll be right back.
Americans have not been born yet. They're waiting patiently for the past to die. Please give blood. Those crumbled tablets were to share a story with a burning bush. Where is that voice from nowhere to remind us that the holy ground we walk on, purified by native blood, has rooted trees whose fallen leaves now color code a sacred list of demands? Who among us can give translation of autumn hues to morning news? The anchor man thrown overboard has simply rooted us in history's repeating cycle, a nation in its saddened years that won't acknowledge karma. Where is that voice from nowhere, the ones your prophet spoke of? There are voices from fear, disconnected from their diaphragms, dangling from coffee-covered teeth that spill into our laps and scorch our privates. There are voices from the sides of necks, some already noosed, dangling participles, pronouns running for sentence, serving life in corner offices and ghetto corners. Their voices are the same, dead to themselves, numb to the possibility of truth existing beyond that which they
can... Much love. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, is the spoken word. It's the hip-hop as a revival, basically, of the spoken word. And maybe we could just listen to one more track from Williams. This is a really, really appropriate for maybe too political in its language, but your audience would, I hope they would appreciate it, especially in a post 9/11 world.
The pledge to resist. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names. Not in our name will you wage endless war. There can be no more deaths, no more transfusions of blood for oil. Not in our name will you invade countries, bomb civilians, kill more children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless. Not in our names will you erode the very freedoms you have claimed to fight for. Not by our hands will we supply weapons and funding for the annihilation of families on foreign soil. Not by our mouths will we let fear silence us. Not by our hearts will we allow whole peoples or countries to be deemed evil. Not by our will and not in our name. We pledge resistance. We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition.
And the story goes on. Mm. So.
No, so this artist, this is Saul Williams.
Saul Williams, indeed.
The brother is so hot. Wonderful illustration. Here you're setting these two things side by side for
correct.
Those people who would think that, you know, who, and with some justification, would criticize the one kind of hip hop. This is an illustration that says there are people who are using this art form as a social political platform for social political commentary.
Exactly, and that's what I'm trying to point to in my own work is the complexity of hip hop. Mm-hmm. I mean, there isn't a monolithic kind of way of thinking about it. In fact, it does injustice to hip hop to think about it in a kind of a rigid booty kind of style. And if people are listening to the Top 40. Clearly, that's what they're going to get, the first school of thought. And so we need to think about, we need to tease out. I hope I'm not setting those two schools as kind of either or. They do pass each other and they do talk to each other many times. In fact, one of the most interesting is characters in hip hop. God bless his soul is Tupac. And in the paper that I'm presenting tomorrow, what I'm trying to tease out is the complexity of that character. What you witness is the two schools in one person. So he could almost kind of in a schizophrenic kind of way talk about. And basically, you know, it's he could shake it very much like James Brown could, but at the same time, he could talk such a political discourses as the Black Panthers could. I mean, and his mom was a Black Panther, so those are the kind of stories that I'm trying to tease out in thinking about and studying hip hop, basically.
Yeah. Well, for anyone who might have just have tuned in, let me introduce again the guest that we have a caller would also like to bring into the conversation. Our guest is Awad Ibrahim. He is associate professor at the Faculty of Education of the University of Ottawa in Canada, and in his work, he teaches and publishes in the areas of hip hop studies and Black pop culture, among other things, and is particularly interested in, has published, exploring the connections between things like language, globalization, culture, the politics of identity, the impact of Black popular culture on young people. He's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois to take part in a one-day workshop. This will take place tomorrow on the U of I campus on language and hip-hop culture in a globalizing world. And we thought it'd be interesting to have him here and on the show and talk a little bit about hip-hop and its impact on global popular culture, or as a force in global popular culture, because it's certainly as you made the point, now it's something that has been embraced both as a performance style, as a mode of expression, as a cultural style by young people just about everywhere in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, in the United States, in Latin America. There are people who do this in their own languages, putting their own twist on it. And it's I'm not sure how many other kinds of things in popular culture have spread as widely and have been as widely embraced. I suppose, you know, perhaps rock and roll,
right,
did.
Right, that's true.
And I, but I'm not even sure that this may even be, in a sense, be bigger.
In fact, in a digitalized world, that's the beauty of hip hop. It came out at a very peculiar and a very particular kind of era, what might be called, you know, the deterritorialized world, basically. I had the pleasure actually with listening to brother. MC Yan, he's a Hong Kong hip hopper, and if you actually listen to him, it's really really interesting the impact of hip hop on him. I came to know in passing conversation that Cantonese is a devalued language in Hong Kong. It's not, you know, it's kind of not highly regarded. What the brother was able to do is basically bringing Cantonese back into the center by reintroducing Cantonese through hip-hop. So it just goes to show you that hip-hop is being localized as a form, as a kind of mode of expression that brings local issues, which are not kind of looked at here in the U.S. We don't really have the sense of the impact of hip hop on the people around us globally. That is, in Brazil, for example, I came to know that it's race is never is never an issue, but it's not an issue. It's not a sexy issue. It's not something that they talk about. And because of hip hop, people are now calling for a racial revolution. So it's that kind of, impact. And another example from Japan, actually, I came to know that in Japanese language, there is no rhyme. It does not exist, did not exist single-handedly because of a brother called Dragon Ash. There is a rhyme now in Japanese language because of hip hop. So it's that kind of impact that we need to think about. We need to kind of appreciate in so many ways, and the globalized nature of hip hop. It's kind of almost unreal. Hence my term, and it's also Sami Alim's term. He's a professor at UCLA. What we in our book that we just finished, or finishing actually, we call it global hip hop nation language. And we're not talking about language per se. We're not talking about kind of the linguistic expression, although the default code for that language is what is known in linguistics as the African American vernacular English. Mm-hmm. That is Black English, basically. That's the kind of the default code for hip hop globally. But within that, there is a very particular kind of language and an expression that comes across in the bodily expression, in the kind of the use of the body, the use of the clothes, and also, and very significantly, the use of the oral expression. The themes that people talk about are really, really interesting. They tend to be quite similar, actually, and part of the paper I'm presenting is kind of juxtaposing a number of how people talk about issues globally.
Well, let us talk with this listener who's been patient with us, on someone on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the conversation. I would like to ask the guest opinion of a certain performer. It's MIA. She's a British citizen from via Sri Lanka. She seems to embody most of what we're talking about here, and covering a wide range of hip hop. And I just wonder what the guest opinion of hers is. I've heard remarks that she might be the most important artist of our time, which is going pretty far. But so, what do you think?
First of all, I appreciate the call. Actually, it's wonderful to hear others thinking about it and knowing a lot more than I. She's a really interesting character. Actually of Sri Lankan background, grew up in Britain, appropriating not just hip-hop, but a mixture of local Sri Lankan language mixed with, believe it or not, Patois, that is Jamaican Patois, and intersected with hip-hop music, which is really, really interesting. To put it kind of on a larger theoretical framework, the French has a term for it, and it's called métissage. And the métissage is basically when you mix a number of people, a number of cultures, a number of languages, and it becomes kind of a hybrid space, a space that is all of these things are talking to each other, and I'm finding it exceptionally interesting to look at that, especially the impact of hip hop at a global level in terms of how people appropriate and are taking up hip hop and hip hop expression and hip hop music, only to localize it. It's really, really interesting to look at the Australian case where Aboriginals now are appropriating hip hop as theirs. In fact, one of them, Wire MC, he argued, quote, "Hip hop has always been local." And it's a really interesting idea to think about the complexity of what that means. That is, hip-hop is Aboriginal. Hip-hop is Indian. He's talking about Aboriginal Australians. So it's a really, really interesting way to think about it, actually.
Well, I think one of the most profound things you said that, I think you're right, it is local. And I think that needs to be underlined. And I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it.
One of the criticisms that has been made of hip hop, particularly of the booty form, is its male-dominated.
Correct.
And one of the things that, about MIA that's unusual is she's a woman. Now, there are women in hip-hop, but the vast majority of the performers, at least as far as I know, those people I've encountered, the vast majority are men. As you now, you have a certainly a more global picture of this than I. Is there any indication that there are more and more young women who are entering into hip hop and doing hip-hop?
Yeah. I think it's there is first of all, I have to agree with you that it's still a male dominated space, but that's just not a very peculiar to hip hop. It's a common phenomenon around the world, where masculinity and basically patriarchy is still a dominating figure. It's a hovering figure and a historical one. So it's hip hop is not immune to that. Hip hop is actually, in so many ways, is an expression of it, but also it complicates it. In other words, it performs masculinity, but as it performs it, it forms it. So it makes us rethink it in different ways. Globally, there's a really, really interesting work that's been done. And maybe at this point, we could listen to the track that is really, I think it's one of the most profound lines in hip-hop at a global level. It's a group of two females from England, Floytree. And they address this idea of the impact of hip hop, especially at a subliminal level, because hip hop doesn't work in a kind of a whiz bang kind of way. It works at a subliminal level, at a subconscious level, it has almost an element of attraction to it. It tees you in, and it makes you desire to have it. And that is, it's a really interesting way to think about it.
Yeah. Do you feel clever? Now forget what everyone else has to say. Do you feel clever? It's like I live in whatever like is always raining, similar, never the same. See, the game don't play that, so I speak maybes and if onlys instead of I ams and fond memories. All that don't feel too good to be, but my genealogy registers adaptability. Ain't that a bitch? Feels like it's fixed, cause my great grandmother spoke of this exact same thing. I use rhyme, but I think she used to sing or just bring her thoughts to a circle of women, and they be aligning chakras and meditating, bad vibes vaccinating, evil energy eliminating, as well as debating on how to raise the children and love the men. But today we're more caught up in Ricky Lakes and Jerry Springer, becoming numb. Now that's the title of my narrative-based novel of fiction. But still, my fascination is loyal to how we manage to stay we, human. A once civilized nation, or so they told me.
Interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's also it raises what Jamaica Kincaid would call. I mean, if you really listen to the lyrics, they're talking about the kind of autobiographical pieces that are not commonly heard, at least not as often in hip hop. The moment of vulnerability. Just being in the word of Jamaica Kincaid, almost writing the autobiography of my mother, and that's what this group was doing. It's writing the autobiography of their mothers. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept to write the autobiography of your mother So it's a kind of, that's kind of historical reflection of taking up history, taking up what mothers have taught us. Mm. And it brings a totally different dimension to the table. So female intervention has been, quite profound, actually, even locally here in nationally here in the U.S., people like Miss Elliott had such an impact on how we kind of unapologetically voicing what they think, and people like Kim, she's as hard as it comes, and she's unapologetic in using her body, not using her body, but talking about it in a kind of not abrasive way, but in eye to eye kind mm-hmm. of way. It's a really interesting dimension.
Well, and certainly what they do and what they talk about, Missy Elliott is doing just what male rappers do. It's just she's a woman, and there are different rules for what men are okay to say, and what is okay for women to say, and we place heavy sorts of judgments on women for saying things that men say, and we say, oh well, that's that's what guys are like.
Exactly, and hence the B word, the hoes and the bitches and so on. It is something to be talked about, but also feminists have already dealt with that in so many ways. John Morgan's work in that area is absolutely fascinating. We're going to listen tomorrow to a sister, Richardson. She does work on what she calls hip-hop literacies, with a particular emphasis on female and how they take up the whole idea of hip-hop and what it means to them. So it does raise, the old, not the classic kind of first wave of feminism about what is she doing? Is she taking up what is already masculine, or is she subverting masculinity by taking up what is already masculine? So that's kind of a philosophical debate that we probably should have at some point as a society, because it's understood in linguistics, a language is already always masculine. So what can she speak in so many ways? Mm-hmm. That's the essential question that we need to ask about.
Let me just again one more time here introduce our guest for anybody who might have tuned in. Awad Ibrahim is associate professor at the Faculty of Education of the University of Ottawa in Canada. His interest is, among other things, in hip hop studies and black pop culture, the impact of black popular culture on young people, the globalization of this culture. He is here visiting Champaign-Urbana to take part in a one-day workshop looking at the interface between language and hip-hop culture. This is called Language and Hip-Hop Culture in a Globalizing World, and this will take place tomorrow on the U of I campus from 8:30 in the morning to 7 in the evening at the Lucy Ellis Lounge. This is in the Foreign Languages Building. Now, this is open to the public. There is no fee to register. However, if you're interested in taking part, they just ask that you do register, and for more information or to register, the easiest thing you can do is go to the webpage of the linguistics folks here at the U of I. Just go to www.linguistics.uiuc.edu, and I'm sure that you can get all the information that you need. And questions are welcome here too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Certainly one of the things we know about hip-hop, the music and the elements of style, is that they have been heavily marketed around the world, and that some people have made a whole lot of money selling music and other things. The kind of this sort of second category of hip hop that we're talking about, this kind of spoken word art form that truly tries to wrestle with difficult problems, to make political and social statements, has that been what's been its economic impact? I mean, can you, I guess the bottom line question is, can you make money making that kind of hip hop? Has anybody made money? Is it commercially really viable?
I think there's I mean, after all, you know, we live in the U.S., so it's the mecca of capitalism. So it's not a big surprise that people want to make money. In fact, Kanye West is probably off the chart, and I just read that. Jay-Z's latest album might set him up and surpassing, guess who? Elvis Presley.
Really?
As the number one the number of CDs that topped the chart immediately after they came out. So it's not a big surprise. At the same time, Jay-Z has a foundation, has a educational programs and so on. So it's the tension that we live with and live through. There are some people who would argue, you know, it's just pure decadence that you come in, you have one track and you make millions of dollars and then you're gone. There is part of me that is saying, those people shouldn't be apologetic about making money, but at the same time, what is the money made for? That's the essential question. I mean, there is the long debate as to how fast do you want to make money, but for me, that's not the essential question. The essential question is, what are you going to do with that money? Is it turned around and kind of used in a socially conscious way, or you know, we have examples of Oprah Winfrey, for that matter, but within hip hop itself, there are a number of foundations. The Afrika Bambaataa's foundation. There is Jay-Z Foundation. There is the Game Foundation. There is Nas Foundation. These are all hip hoppers who made tons and tons of money. But your question is really, really essential in that. You know, what's the purpose basically of making money, and can you make money out of socially conscious hip hop? Mm-hmm. But my bottom line, and I mean, we see the charts, and of course the answer is yes. But then we're left with, okay, so what? What's the next thing? And that is one of the things that we, you know, hip hop in particular needs to think about and address. KRS-One has always, you know, raised the kind of what he calls the edutainment. So it's the use of hip hop as educational tool, and might as well just read just a short poem of his. These are poems circulating to the nation. Everybody's bad and everybody's tough. But how many people are intelligent enough to open up their eyes and see the lies, discipline themselves, yourself, to stay alive? Not many. That's why the universe has sent me today on this stage with this to say. The rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer, and in the final hour, many heads will lose power. What does the rich versus poor really mean? Psychologically, it means you gotta pick your team. Mm. And that is the question, the essential question that we need to think about, I think.
You know, there's something else I'm interested in having you talk a little bit about. It's a little bit of a side street, but it illustrates this point of just to what extent young people have embraced hip hop and used that as a way to define themselves. And I'm very curious to have you try to talk a little bit about this. And it concerns a project that you did where you followed some young people, some kids, adolescents,
right,
young people,
right.
Who went from Africa to Canada, and they went to a French-speaking high school.
Correct.
And about the ways in which they tried to figure out who they were, who they thought they were, who other people thought they were, and that in fact, it was something something sort of along the lines of how they learned to be black, or how they learned what it meant to be black.
Right, right.
The role that hip hop played in that.
It's a really absolutely fascinating story. And I'm saying it as a story because it's exactly what you said. What I did is I followed this group of young people. They varied from 12 years up to 18, 19 years old. At the time of the research, they had just arrived to Canada. And what was really interesting is they entered what I call a social imaginary, where they were already perceived, thought about, written about, assumed to be black, and in the process of struggling with this social imaginary, I came to realize by simply hanging out with them. I hung out with them for 6 months. By hanging out, I mean literally, I lived with them for 6 months. Like, I went to school with them. I went, we played basketball. We went picnic, and I went to their houses. Like, I had a solid sense of who they are and the experiences that they went through. But as I was deciphering that, there was a pattern that kept occurring time and time again, and that is the question of who they are. And for them, there was a kind of almost an immediate translation that came against, if you like, that social imaginary where they were, they all look black to me, kind of idea. Mm. So because they are perceived black, and they were treated as such. Not that there's anything, I'm not trying to assume any negativity to it. I'm just saying this is what the kids experience. But as they were negotiating that, there was a culture space that they found very seductive, if you like, very enlightening to them, very appealing, to be exact, and that was the culture, the hip hop culture. So they, as part of their process of discovering themselves, they took up this hip hop identity. They ended up performing hip hop identity, and I actually have a video where it's a really interesting moment where they actually, in the span of 6 months, they moved from no English whatsoever to speaking black English, which they accessed through hip hop. So it's a kind of, but here language becomes a kind of a linguistic expression on the one hand, but also an identity representation. Mm-hmm. So they invoke, terms like "what's up, homeboy," and so on, as a kind of a way, as a gesture to where they want to be located and where they are locating themselves. So as they were doing that, there was a kind of an interesting space of dialogue among themselves and within themselves, whereby who are we? So they ended up learning Black English as a second language, and what I call BESL, and that is really interesting concept, because then language becomes kind of a kind of an identity performance, basically. So there is kind of a juxtaposition of language, question of desire and investment, and identity formation, and that is. This, I found that absolutely fascinating in so many ways, and because it also raises the question of how do we become? How do we? And the process of becoming is not just limited to these kids. It's kind of a process that we all go through. I mean, even if you are coming into UFI as a freshman, there is a kind of process that you go through to become a student in UFI. And so this is the kind of, like, what is that process? I'm interested in the ways in which we end up performing those things. So language at some point becomes not just about language, but an identity performance, basically. Mm.
So this was a place where the language of instruction was French.
Correct.
Right. But then were, they were speaking their their acquired black vernacular English. Was that what they used when they spoke among themselves?
They ended up kind of almost creating what I call the third space, where they could switch between languages. So in the same sentence, they would be speaking, you know, their native tongues, such as, you know, Somali, for example, and switch between that into French, and from French to not English, but black vernacular English, and that's a really interesting space to be in.
How did their parents feel about transformation?
It's a really, really good question. I think that the follow-up, at least for me, is with the parents. I really want to follow up and see what they thought. But from what I gathered, and it wasn't like a thorough part of the research, but the parents were on the one hand, you know, kind of didn't know what to do. Or didn't know what to say because the kids were speaking a language that they did not understand. And it entered the complexity of parenting and parenthood. I found that absolutely just fascinating.
Yeah. We have one caller here. I do want, my apologies if I've kept them waiting. I want to get them in here before we end up out of time on our toll-free line. Line 4, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
It seems to me that in the U.S. at least, the largest audience for hip-hop are white teenagers and young people.
Right.
And for them, the consciousness hip-hop is totally lost on them.
Mm.
And so hip-hop functions for them as a kind of a postmodern minstrel show. And the political potential of hip-hop is completely lost and overwhelmed by consumerism. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And first of all, I appreciate the call, actually. That raises like a really, really significant question for at least for us as people who are thinking and working with hip hop. And that is the feeding into the old kind of almost mantra of black innovation, white imitation on the one hand, but also very significantly the perpetual image of blackness as perceived in hip hop, as perceived in the top 40, as what I call the booty hip hop, it does raise a really essential question. What I call the loving critique. We need to critique those forms of hip hop. On the one hand, we need to just simply critique overall the kind of booty hip hop, you are absolutely not just right, but bang on in terms of are we just perpetuating the kind of historical image of blackness, where it's just a pure entertainment on the one hand, and a moment of joy that you could slip in and slip out of.
Is there a politically conscious artist in the U.S. who is engaging these white?
I've heard KRS-One actually a few times. Chuck D in particular is a really perfect example of that. But Kanye West as well. I know he's being critiqued. Not a lot of people. But some people do question, you know, a lot of what his work is about. But it's those kind of things. It's Andre 3000 actually also taught a course with Cornel West at Princeton. So it's those kind of there is kind of an underground work that's going on. That we need to engage, I think.
Thank you very much. Right,
thank you.
Popular music is a very perishable art form. the shelf life can be pretty limited, although I suppose that there would have been one point in the early days of rock and roll when people said, ah, this stuff, you know, it's never going to last.
Right.
And here we are like 50 years later and we're, you know, it still goes through different incarnations and styles come and go and then they come back. But, you know, people are still performing in largely the same kind of music.
Right.
So here now, hip hop has been going for a good 30 years, probably.
Right.
So it seems to have significant longevity and has spread everywhere.
Right.
Do you think another 20, 30, 40 years that hip hop will still be, it might be, there may be differences, there will be new
Correct.
Performances, you know, who knows what kind of changes it will go through. But do you think that it's still going to be with us?
I think it will. And I have a few thoughts on that. Clearly, hip hop is a kind of a continuum to the black artistic expression and musical tradition. We said the same thing about jazz. We said the same thing about blues. And here we are. It will definitely take a different shape, different form. But it will be with us, at least, even if it will be in a different form, it will, maybe take a different name. I'm not trying to assume anything, but the black expression has always been very, very innovative. So it wouldn't surprise me that a spin-off hip-hop will come about. What it is and how does it look like? It's a kind of a different game. But it feeds into hip-hop as a form of expression. Maybe we could end up with a kind of the last track. And this is from Mims, and he's talking about what has always been a really solid sense within the black community, and that is this not only the spoken word, but music as a savior.
Music is my savior. When I was young, where I'm from, people didn't get out. People just sat in them corners hustling for years. No sense of hope. Just an addiction to survive off of other people's addictions. So I made music mine. Him right there, he ran the spot. You couldn't make no money without seeing him. And them right there, well, they work for him. You see, a lot of faces come through and just disappear. Not because they move up, mostly because...
I'm sorry to say we're going to have to leave it at that because we've come to the end of the time. I really appreciate you being here and spending some time with us.
I really, really appreciate it as well. Thank you so much.
Awad Ibrahim, he's associate professor at the Faculty of Education at University of Ottawa in Canada, and he's here with us on the campus to take part in a one-day workshop on language and hip-hop culture in a globalizing world. Our show made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 25th anniversary of offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana. Bodywork now is an office inside the Oasis Center in the Illini Union. We're going to break for an update on the market. Stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the markets. We're at midday. Corn futures are lower on profit-taking after the release of USDA's November crop report. Key features from the report, USDA left unchanged its estimate for exports for corn at 2.35 billion bushels, and also left unchanged its forecast for ethanol usage at 3.2